Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson. Thanks for joining us. Fred and I were talking about how you achieve high reliability. And we've sort of framed it around certain steps to achieving high reliability. And we'd love to engage you in the conversation with us.
You know, Carl, you have this great graphic, right? We use it in our presentations. We're incorporated into the book we're working on. So we'll have to put that in the show notes. So at this point, just bear with us that it's a block diagram that shows a series of steps. Unfortunately, it's audio, so I'm going to do a lot of hand-waving here and pointing at a graph that unfortunately you can't see. This works a lot better, Carl, if we're actually in a coffee shop or at a conference and somebody walks up and we have a copy of that slide.
You have a copy of it and hand it to them. But I think we can visualize it, make it visual.
Okay.
In our audio.
All right. So before we dive into that, and it is pretty simple. So if you get a second, grab a piece of paper. We're going to give you an outline, basically, and then we'll provide a little more context for what we're talking about. Before we do that, though, let's take a quick break.
Hi, it's James Kovacic here from HP Reliability. I encourage you, if you haven't had the opportunity yet, to download our free ebook on A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. You can find that at ascendoreliability.com/go/PM. If you have any questions, need help with your current PM program, please don't hesitate to reach out at info@hpreliability.com. Thanks.
All right, Carl, I can see it, right? I don't have it on my screen right now, but I've seen this diagram a number of times, so I can visualize it. Why don't you walk us through that real quick?
Sure. There's five steps that we talk about at a very high level, and each of these steps essentially become chapters in the book that we're writing. And the first step is developing what we call a reliability strategic vision. And just at a very high level, the strategic vision is more than the product reliability requirements. Reliability requirements are part of it, but we're also talking about what's the future from a reliability viewpoint, including infrastructure, resources, skills, methods capability, all the different things that go into achieving reliability. Do you want to be?
Yeah. See, I push out a little bit. It's not just do I have chambers in the building or not, and how much failure analysis do we do? And I think those are all important. But I think that first discussion's got to be, where do we want to position the products? How compared to our competition and compared to the market, and where's that going with our product offerings into the future? Where do we want to be? Do we want to be the reliable solution, or do we want to be in the mix? And how do we tell the difference? And what's our current, what's our business model? And how dependent is that on reliability? I think we can frame all of those other things you just listed by knowing what's our business proposition as well.
Absolutely. And so oftentimes that step one of developing the reliability strategic vision needs to be done with management, and so that and with feedback from the employees. So it's a very much a roundtable type discussion, cross-functional, to say, where do we want to be? And as you said, Fred, that very often is characterized for where do we want to be in relationship to our competition and over what period of time. Mm-hmm. And then the where we want to be is more than just the metric of reliability. It also includes the other aspects of skills and methods capability and things like that. So that's a very 30,000 foot view of what we call the first step. Mm-hmm. And it fits, if you remember the Stephen Covey book on the seven steps, highly successful people, is begin with the end in mind.
That's right. Yeah. And that's where I connect it to the business model. And it's also in part of that discussion to make sure that we have management support. And if we don't have the resources, if we don't have any connection to our business, it's everything else we do is just going to be a struggle. And so this first step is really to make those connections, have those discussions in your organization that positions the importance of reliability appropriately. And then the rest of the steps then are aimed more at executing that vision.
Exactly. Exactly. So then some people might think, and this would be an error, that you go right from the reliability vision to the list of tools that you're going to use or list of methods.
Oh, yeah. So HALT, FMEA, yeah. ALT, Black Diet, RBD. It's all three-letter acronyms or four-letter acronyms.
Yeah, that's right. So we've said that selecting the right reliability methods is important, but we've characterized that as step three in this steps to achieving high reliability. And step two is one of the most important steps of all and is often missed. And in fact, if we were interactively, you know, working with our audience right now, I would ask them, what do you think step two is? And just to get them thinking about it, what is this important step that goes before you select the reliability methods that go into your reliability plan? So as an audience, if you're...
Do you have a copy of 785?
Yeah. What's your template? Just think about for a minute what you would insert between the reliability vision and selecting the reliability methods. What would it be?
You know, and it's funny, Carl, as you frame that question, and I've been in this circumstance at different stages of my career where it's, okay, I get it. Here's what we need to do. Here's our milestones. Here's our timeline. Here's what we're trying to achieve. And that's kind of a framing for a plan already. Right. And then I open up Wayne Nelson's book on accelerated testing and I say, okay, we're going to do ALT because that was the first book I grabbed it's an important question that we need to answer. I didn't really think about or consider much of anything else. And then vice versa is in later years, a lot of my consulting work is this second step is why I'm there. That's the real value add of what I bring to the table is how do you convert that vision into something that you can actually execute? And it's not as simple as just listing three and four letter acronyms.
No, it is not. And just to the audience, now that you've had a chance to think about this, the step two, the way that Fred and I are characterizing it is perform reliability gap assessment. And that gap assessment is essentially identifying the gaps between what you are today. So we're going to assess your current capability today compared to the vision for where you want to be in the future.
Yeah, and a quick example is it's going through, do you have those resources and capabilities and understanding to execute a reliability set of tasks, program? If nobody in your organization has ever heard of HALT, H-A-L-T, and it's confused with accelerated testing or it's confused with statistics or something else, that's a gap. And it may require some training and some education and some demonstrations to introduce that concept to your organization. If you just list and jump into a HALT test, Carl, you've run into this. You bring the HALT results back to the team or you get them involved with it and they go, well, of course it broke. You overstressed it. And then they dismiss it.
Yeah.
So that's a gap.
What good is that, they'll say. Yeah. And similarly, if you've been doing FMEAs for years, but they're poor quality FMEAs, mm-hmm. that's a gap.
It is. And it goes on and on. It goes from equipment resources to availability of prototypes and test materials. It also includes the gap of how you talk to your vendors and the reliability of the components and subsystems you receive. It goes beyond what's in your test lab by far. Without getting into all the details of it, it's a program level what's working and what's not working, and what are the capabilities you can build on, and what are the strengths you can enhance within your organization.
And that brings up something for the readers or the listeners, I'm sorry, that are interested in this subject, is Fred and I, chapter 6 of our book is the Reliability Strategic Vision, and chapter 7 is Performing a Reliability Gap Assessment. And these will become or are available on the website that we'll let you know about. And so you can participate with us in this journey.
That's right. And just to... Let's leave that as a tease to the end of the maybe.
Okay.
I was going to jump on there and do the URL and that. No, I think you're right, Carl. We'll have to leave that till a little later.
Yeah, let's leave that till later, and then go to once we've identified the gap and there's more to it. This is it's its own subject, and we've got a dedicated chapter to it because there's a lot to it on getting a good gap assessment done. At that point, between the strategic vision and the gap assessment, we're ready to start selecting reliability methods that are being incorporated into the reliability plan.
That's right. And it's limited to 3- and 4-letter acronyms.
Yes.
Fracas is just way too long. We can't do that one.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I'm being facetious there. But I've seen it way too often. You take what we did last time, or you take the tools that you're most capable of using and just do them again. And I've seen some really atrocious examples of that are very, very expensive and very, very ineffective. And I think that's the key to this task or this step is pick the tools and the tasks and the specific items that you need to do that will actually help you solve a problem or answer a question or get better information and move the program along, rather than just a checklist of, we have to do environmental tests, 47 different environmental stress tests and 28 different accelerated life tests and 16 different studies of modeling this and that and the other thing. And no, that's not a plan. I'm sorry.
That's not a plan, exactly. So there's right ways to go about it, and there's wrong ways. And Fred, you're outlining some of the wrong ways. You don't take a canned template and apply it automatically. You don't take a long list. How many methods are there? If you look at a reliability handbook, there's like dozens and dozens.
Oh, it's more than that. Years ago, I was trying to create a one-page checklist to do this gap assessment stage, right? Mm-hmm. The previous step. And I wanted to cover a pretty comprehensive spread of tools and activities. So I sent it to a colleague of mine, and he sent me back 384 different tasks.
Oh my God.
You know, I was like, no, I'm not going to ask all these questions.
Eyes rolling. Yeah. This is very much about the 80-20 rule. We want to get the vital few tools and methods that will achieve the reliability objectives. And in order to select those, we're going to use the reliability gap assessment.
Yeah. And you have to know where you're at, what's possible, what are you capable of doing, but also it's with an eye towards, what do you want to build on? What new capabilities would be suitable for this particular juncture, this particular program you're working on or project you're working on? And then what's the right tools? And in those cases, then it may involve more education or trialing or prototyping. For the things you're already good at, you can rely on those to give you results. And so it's a mix. It always is a mix, but it's balancing. You don't want to introduce a reliability program and go straight to the high-end statistics and design of experiments and physics of failure modeling and extensive, complicated, accelerated life tests when the team really doesn't have any comprehension of what those are. So it's a balance of picking the right tools within the constraints of what you're capable of doing and with an eye towards continuing to grow the effectiveness of your program, of the reliability program.
So the reliability gap assessment will help to identify the capabilities of the organization. Mm-hmm. And like you say, Fred, over time, then we're going to move that organization up that what's called the maturity matrix, which is the subject of a separate podcast. I want to say that I like the way that we're breaking it down, because the reliability methods are broken down into four categories: those that help identify requirements, those that help with risk reduction, those that help with assurance, and those that help with organizational improvements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and organizational is, to expand on that just briefly, Carl, is it's not how where your reliability team sits in the organization, right? That may be or may not be the key factor. Right. It's if you're doing what equipment do you have? What reporting structures do you have? What data collection capability and facilities do you have? It's those things that support multiple projects, not just the one you're on today.
Right, right. So once we have the step three, selecting the right reliability methods, now we can go into creating an effective reliability plan. So we really go through these different stages: the vision setting, the gap assessment, selecting the methods, and now taking those methods and creating an actual plan. At this point, we're talking about what's going to be done, who's going to do it, when's it going to be done, how is it going to be done, and laying all that out into a roadmap.
Yeah, and you know, think PERT chart, Gantt charts, decision points, and it's got to fit into your program plan. Like if you have a group of engineers working on a project and they have a deadline, don't incorporate a accelerated life test that's going to take 6 months longer than the plan the project's going to be worked on. They need that information sooner than later, so it may take an alternate ALT or a different way of doing that to meet the timeline. So you got to fit these tasks within the constraints. And the thing I focus on, Carl, is who needs to make a decision and what information do they need? And that informs the scheduling to a large degree for your reliability project, your plan.
Yeah, that's excellent. I like the way you frame that, because the different decisions are made at different stages of the product development process, and the methods you're selecting and the execution of those methods have to support those decisions. So then the last step, once you've got a plan in place, which is certainly not the end, because now you have to execute it. And this is not trivial. I think if you've done a really good job of involving the organization in creating a very good reliability plan, in other words, you didn't do it by yourself over in the corner somewhere, then it has a higher likelihood of getting executed. Mm-hmm. But executing reliability plan tasks is our step five. And that's not trivial. That takes actual work. And like you say, if you've incorporated it into the business process of accomplishing tasks and making decisions, that helps out a lot.
Yeah, it's amazing the scope of a reliability engineer, right? We started this with being cognizant of the business model, the drivers that are touching on or relying on the reliability performance of a product, and converting that into, well, where do we want to be with this particular product generation and into the future? And that's a strategic level discussion that you would think a bunch of MBAs would be sitting around talking about. But we contribute significant information and talent to that discussion. And at the end of the day, it's very tactical to deliver this stuff, yet it takes project management skills and, you know, considering lead times and decision points and branches and backup plans and so on. The reliability plan can often be as complicated and to some extent as expensive as the project development plan itself. And that's kind of daunting. It's a lot of responsibility and a lot of resources you're doing, but it's commensurate with the impact that information has on the product's design and the eventual customer's perception of your product.
Yeah, great point. This is something to aspire to. It's not an easy thing for a new reliability engineer to get their arms around. It's something to work towards, is establishing or getting the skills attaining the skills that are necessary to create a really good reliability plan. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's interactive. It's not something you do by yourself. And we hope, Fred and I hope to help you out in that journey with guidance and information. But it's a journey you have to walk.
It is. And it gets better with experience. And hopefully this, you know, what I like about the steps that you've laid out, Carl, and it's really been the premise of a lot of our discussions and why we decided to go write a book on this stuff, was that it sets you on the right. If only I'd heard this when I started. And I think, Carl, that would be similar for
you. Oh, my God, yes.
It'd have saved us lots of
so much
problems.
Better.
Yeah, it would have been so much better off. So hopefully it sets you on the right path. What we can't do, and what Carl and I both don't do, is say, you've got a new product. That's great. Here's plan A. Here's the 15 different things you have to do and do them by, here's the timeline. It works for every project. You're all good. You know, on the face of it, that this just doesn't happen that way. And so the steps that Carl laid out and we've discussed is crucial, in our opinion, to create a set of tasks that actually make a difference. You can create a set of tasks and go execute all kinds of cool reliability stuff that have no relevance or are used by anybody. That's not what we're talking about. And so it's get it right from the start. It gets you and your program and your career moving a whole lot quicker into a very favorable place. So hopefully that all makes sense.
Yeah, and it does. As you mentioned there, Fred, doing this well is a really good career path for people, because each of these steps needs a certain body of knowledge from reliability. Mm-hmm. And each of these steps are aided by the skills that you have as a reliability engineer and the skills that you're enhancing in your career. So mm-hmm. this kind of brings it all together. And using all the different types of skills. So you might need help on certain aspects, and certain aspects you may be able to do without a lot of help. Sometimes the help will be within the organization. Sometimes the help will be at a conference like RAMS, and sometimes with books like we're referring to on reliability management.
Yep. And speaking of the book, it's a good spot for us to mention that is typically when we're near the end of our episode, we mentioned go to reliability.fm where you can find show notes and all kinds of stuff. What Carl mentioned it earlier is that we do have the drafts of the book. I think we have 5 or 6 chapters or something close to that online, and we're slowly working on it when we get time. And unfortunately, we've been pretty busy lately, but we're working slowly on getting the rest of the chapters out there, and they're draft chapters and very deliberately available to you at ascendoreliability.com/go/REM. Reliability Engineering Management is our working title for the book. So REM. And there you can find our current published chapters that we've got out there, the draft chapters, and you'll see lots of comments on those chapters. And many people have sent us direct messages rather than put it into the comments field. Either way is fine, but that's the trade here. We're giving you our book free, essentially, and what we expect back is your comments. What's working, what's not working, what's confusing, what's missing, what did we over-explain, what needs examples. All of those things are from you to us is just absolute gold. We would love to hear your impressions and insights and thoughts on the draft chapters that we've published so far. And again, that's at ascendoreliability.com/go/REM. And do I have to spell? So, Carl, what do you think? Do I spell Ascendo and or the word go? Or is that going to
work? I think it's going to work.
All right.
Very, very simple.
All right. Yeah. So we'd love to hear your perceptions on that. And Carl and I have been gathering comments that we've received so far. And it's we already know it's going to change the book to make it so much better. And so we'd love to hear from you what your thoughts are of that.
Yeah, we're not trying to write a textbook that is just what Fred and I think alone. We want to be informed and broadened, our vision broadened by the feedback we get from professionals and listeners and people that are in the business.
Oh, and so people are just starting that. Too, you know? Yeah, if you're just getting started, I loved it. Yeah, that'd be perfect. So anyway, once again, it's ascendoreliability.com/go/REM. And so with that, Carl, I think we'll wrap this one up.
All right. Nice talking to you, Fred.
All right. Thanks, Carl. Yeah, get back to work. You have another chapter, you owe me, although I have one too.
All right. We'll see you later.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.